Welcome to the Ryan Massano Show, where eternal truths, divine insight, and traditional values are championed. Remember, truth is hate for those who hate the truth. So for the next 2 hours, enjoy this sanctuary of traditional values, eternal truths, and divine insights. Now here's your host, Ryan Massano.
Oh, you know what? Okay, I was muted. So I'm actually in Hemet, California, in a room in the library used for adult literacy. We have a very good show prepared for you today. This is the Ryan Massano Show with your host, Ryan Massano, with you. We are on Saturdays, 2 to 4 Pacific time, and that's 5 to 7 Eastern time. So on the second hour today, we will have on courageous truth teller Jeff Perrine. He has a lot of experience speaking out against tyranny, bravely spoke out against masks. His video went viral. Jeff has been doing this kind of work for a long time, many years. While many have been at home, Jeff has been out in the field taking criticism, taking Antifa attacks, taking doxing, and he has been a very... And that you're listening to speakfreeradio.com. So we're going to play two clips of Jeff's videos. We're going to let you know what he has done. We're going to go over what happened in Vallejo. Oh, yes. And if you want to call in, please do so by going to Speak Free Radio. And there's a black triangle on there. And there are archives as well. If you pull up Saturday, you'll see the Ryan Massano Show. Archives will show up and you'll be able to view that. So also, we went to Vallejo this past week and we have that experience. We have that on audio. That was a very, very interesting experience. So when you go to Speak Free Radio, if you do want to call in, and we won't have those today, but we definitely look forward to hearing from listeners in the future. But if you go there, the black triangle there will allow you to call in. Or the black triangle is to listen, and you go to the menu, call and chat, and that will bring you in on to the show. And then if we are taking call-ins, I'll let you into the studio if that works. Okay, so... Also, in Vallejo, we had about 200 to 300 people in attendance. We will also, this is going to be on podcast. So every show that has been done has been on podcast. So be sure if you are not able to listen in live that you listen to the podcasts and go to the future ones as well and share those as much as possible if you would. We're also going to review a few items from the past week in the first hour. Topics will include the American fertility rate. Is it healthy to take a shower daily? And the Kennedy assassination. Also, a reminder that after the show, Jim Rizzoli and Diana Ploss will come on right after us with Hoax Busters. And both have been fantastic, have a lot of information to share. It's highly recommended to tune into them. Jim's been doing this for quite a long time, and his insight into a lot of what's going on is extremely exceptional. It's better than anything you'll see on television, the radio, or in newspapers. So, also, from what I can see here, Let's go ahead and play Jeff's clip first of all. Jeff Perrine, I just want everybody to hear this. This happened in the Lincoln, California City Council. And this video that Jeff did went viral, actually. And this is at the height of the mass pandemic. So let's go ahead and hear from Jeff. This actually happened, when was this? January 8th, 2022. So over 2 years ago this happened. This was in the midst of the whole COVID thing. Jeff went to the school board, not the city council. And here is what he had to say.
My name is Garrett Perrine. I'm a resident. I lived in the Rockland area for 7 years. This is a concern area. When I see members of the board of schools that are in control of our children the way they think, I'm disgusted. This is exactly why my kids are at home, homeschooled.
I'll interject throughout. So Jeff is saying what a lot of people think, but they don't have the courage to stand up there and say it. People are disgusted, but so it's very few men you see actually get up there and tell the truth about how these people are incompetent. And I mean, it's a tough balance because a lot of these people are ignorant. They don't belong in positions of power. And so for people to reveal that in public is something that needs to be done a lot more. When they come to these city council meetings, it needs to get to the point to where they are uncomfortable to come to these meetings. This is not a safe space for their liberal agenda. Let's continue.
From people like you, they want to poison their minds, think there's something they should fear. You guys are like the boogeyman. You're creating hysteria, and you're creating a generation of children with so much anxiety. You're going to create an...
Very true. All these kids that were brainwashed with this COVID agenda, that was absolute craziness. And the fact that so many adults let their kids be indoctrinated with this is a very troubling aspect.
Our generation of pill-popping junkies, and this is going to be your view, because they have no idea what other people's...
Pill-popping junkies. And that's perfect, because that's exactly what it's going to create. Kids, already we got problems with drugs, and it's only going to get worse. You know, these kids with anxiety, when you're being taught lies all your life, it's kind of hard to cope with the fact that you're so many institutions that you trusted were flat out lying to you.
Smiles look like they're going to grow up in a world of angry, bitter people, pissed off citizens who have no idea. This mouth plays a major role in nonverbal communication. I've taken psychology classes. I went to the indoctrination camps. I got my bachelor's degree in South State. Okay, I went to Sierra College. I made it through. And you know what? I learned that there are people who will stand up to kids, and there's people like you, people that pretend like you stand up for the kids because you want the paycheck, you want the company name, you're president. Well, I'm president too, bro. We're both president of the group. Congratulations. But I stand up for the kids. That's the difference. I stand up for the kids in the community. I put my life on the line for these kids. I stand up for everybody's kids and all of the communities. So understand?
That's a key point, because this is why the men need to stand up and speak out, because no one else is speaking out for the children. That's all the children in America. It's very sad that this nation has millions of children, and the men are sitting and not really speaking up in public for them. And it's not just wearing masks. It's also homosexuality, transgenderism, all the evils, and there are a host of them that confront. It is the man's role to stand up, take the heat, and confront this stuff. And the failure of many men to do this. And the funny thing is, a lot of the men that fail to stand up and speak out on this, they're the biggest, fiercest opponents of those of us who do. They don't have time to get up in public and speak the truth, but they do have time to attack those of us who do. Such a backwards ideology. Let's continue. And Jeff is one of the rare ones that will constantly do this.
These women right here, these sagging beta males, let these women find in.
Jeff's right. These women should not even be in politics. This is a huge, huge, huge mistake. It has harmed women, children, and the family for so long. And it's a very controversial topic, because your average woman has been trained about this female empowerment and all this. which is total nonsense. Let's continue.
You are seen as a weak, minuscule man. That's all my brother men like you. Those are men. You understand? You are a weak, minuscule man. And I'm not going to let you influence the other boys in this community to be little cops. You understand?
Now, to be fair, I think if every man's honest with himself, he'll admit he's been a coward at some point or another in his life. That's not a problem. The problem is when you stay that way. That's the problem. And that's what Jeff's addressing. Because when he says cucks, he's talking about the men who sit around and don't do what they're supposed to be doing in the face of adversity. That's what a cuck is. And there's too many of those. I would say a good 90% of your male politicians are this kind of effeminate man that when it's time to speak the truth, they either are nowhere to be found or they're speaking a lie.
This is the city of men, non-gender identified people. You understand? Okay. There are men and there are women. And there are babies and there's outlets. And this Omicron crap is a joke. Take the mask off, take a deep breath, go do some yoga, wear the mask. Okay? Another time. Let's stop poisoning our children's brains. This is psychological damage. And I know you're looking at me, bro, because you know what I'm saying? It's truth. You know it. You're going to go home and sleep on this, and it's going to bother you. And I'll be back in 2 weeks, bro. I'll be back there in 2 weeks. So I'm going to go home and sleep. I'm just going to do that. I'm going to go home and sleep. You understand? You can sell your checks. And you guys know. I'm going to go home. I'm going to go people against you guys. There ain't going to be no easy peasy election next time. You understand? There's going to be at least two or three people in each position. It's all right. I don't care what you've done in the community, because this is enough. You put all the goods you want, and you poison my kid's mind, it's done. Okay? You cross the line. So I'll let you know. We're pissed, and it's enough.
So that was actually on Conservative Treehouse. That was really well done. It got 221 comments. I know that thing had to get a couple million views. It was very well done. And Jeff is a rare father who stands up and does this. I speak out on the truth, but I don't have kids and I'm not married. Jeff is a father who's doing this, which makes a big difference because he's speaking out for his kids and the kids of every other American, whether they like it or not. He's doing the job that a lot of American men are not only not doing, they're vacating. So, that was his first video. His second one was, he's going to be speaking out here on diversity, equity, and inclusion. And that was, he's addressing the anti-white rhetoric that we've been seeing and hearing a lot in our schools. So let's go ahead and play that clip.
Good evening, board. Good evening, board. My name is Jeffrey Perron. I'm here as a concerned citizen. I'm here as a person who lives in the community. I ran for office in this district. I had a lot of people who were concerned about the equity. It's a really, really big deal. It's a big topic. A lot of people as parents are concerned. It's very vague, ambiguous. You see the language, the rhetoric is discussing, you know, anti-racist education. You ask a person of color who can be racist. No one of color can be racist. So when I see anti-racist education, all I see is anti-white.
And that is very well said, because nobody can object to that. That's exactly what's going on. When they say the word racist, it doesn't mean anyone in America but white people. Only whites can be racist. And of course they say, only whites can be racist and whites control everything, which isn't even true, because if you look at the Federal Reserve, which is the money, it's not controlled by whites at all. It's controlled by Talmudic Jews. But your average person is never told that. So you got millions of Americans, I would say 50 million at least, probably a good deal more, non-whites and whites, who all believe that whites are a problem and whites are racism and that this is a big problem in America. It's absolute. And so what they're trying to do is to stir up a race war. They learn from communist Russia and they learn from communist China that you could, in those countries, pit the rich against the poor and start yourself a nice communist revolution, which ended in 100 million plus dead, which is the biggest death machine ever. Well, they know here in America, we have something different. Back in Russia and China, they had peasants who were unarmed, illiterate. So that was a pretty easy picking for them. They took those two countries over first for a labor market. America's a little bit different in the fact that we have a middle class, and our middle class is armed. So getting everybody to fight each other is going to be a little bit harder because you're not dealing with illiterate peasants that are easily intimidated. You're dealing with people who can read, who can write, who could do math. But the problem is you got most of us are brainwashed. But yeah, this is their strategy here in America. So, you know, people need to be aware that they are trying to start a race war. That's what's exactly going on. And the sooner we realize that and spread that message, the better off it'll be. I was actually doing hiking today. I did a 3-mile hike at this, I think it's called Diamond Point Lake out in Hemet. Nice area. And there was a couple women, I overheard them talking. They had like orange safety vests. I don't know exactly what their role was, but I overheard them talking. And I've been wanting to just like go up to your average person and just like start a conversation. But, you know, with people being so brainwashed these days, that's a kind of a dangerous proposition, especially when I say what I say. So what I did was I did my hike, and on my way back, I was like, you know, and it was two women, and overhearing them, I kind of thought, oh, you know, they could be Black Lives Matter activists. I don't know what I'm dealing with here, but let me just talk to them. So I did. And they turned out they were on some work release program. I guess they have like 4 days left for some infraction. I didn't go into what they were guilty of. One of them, I gave them my number. She may be calling me back. And if she calls me back, I'm going to have her on my show because she was extremely knowledgeable on a lot of these topics, drugs in the Black community, the fatherlessness in the Black community, the FBI or the CIA being behind drugs, very knowledgeable on things. She just, of course, you know, either didn't know or wasn't courageous enough to say exactly who was behind it, but she, you know, she very good listener, and she didn't emotionally explode, which is saying a lot. And the other, I think it was, I'm not going to say their names, but both of them were very good listeners, and which is a rare attribute. So that was good to see. I mean, and to see, I could just walk up to two young women and they're kind of knowing what's going on, and they're not brainwashed enough to just totally reject the truth being fed to them. So let's continue on with this video.
So we need to stop playing games. I'm not here to talk and play semantics with you guys. I'm a concerned citizen who gained almost 3,000 votes in the local community. I got votes based on my stances and my views. You might be a leftist extremist who wants to be funded by the gay queers of Sacramento. That's your choice. But I have just as much right to represent the Christians and the families that support two genders, marriage between a man and a woman, natural marriage, natural family, all of the above, okay? So this equity is just absolute trash. I went to the curriculums meeting 2 weeks ago. It's just all anti-white, anti-Christian, anti-European crap. It is literally work of Marxists.
Yes, and this is very, very, very dangerous because when the mobs start going on the streets, there's going to be no stopping it. And that is what is being planned for right now. We've already had trial runs, George Floyd, Rodney King. The media has the ability, by sensationalizing whatever they want us to see, they have the ability to whip up millions of Americans into violent action. It's not just that either. There are other tens of millions of Americans who are put into fear and inaction because they feel like, oh, I'm white, I'm not, I'm guilty, so I should just sit here and check my privilege. And then you got non-whites who are very resentful. They may not participate, but if a time comes to end it, they won't do it. In their mind, they're going to think, ah, yes, that's what whites get for slavery and all that. Yes, I'm for that. They don't realize when these bankers are done with whites, they'll be right after all the other groups too. So yeah, it's a very dangerous situation. I cannot emphasize that enough. We cannot move against this fast enough. And you move against it by simply telling the truth. Let's move on.
Cultural Marxists did that. They're communists and they're anti-white. And I'm going to reiterate it at every meeting I have to come to. It doesn't matter how you label it as anti-racist, anti-whatever, pro-equity. Equity means we all get to the same place, whether that is in a crap hole, unable to read or write or do math, which is what it seems like you guys are happy about. 56% of kids can read, write, and do math? Wow.
Outstanding point by Jeff. That's what needs to be hammered home in every single city council or school board meeting in America, is that these children in these schools are being hit with all of this propaganda about sexual deviancy, homosexuality, transgenderism, racism, all this stuff. They learn all that. But you know what they don't learn? They don't learn the basics, the three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic. They can't the vast majority of your kids, when they come out of school, they cannot do those things competently at the 12th grade level. And then these schools, they say, oh, we're sending people to college. You are sending them to college. And what is that going to do? Give them a ton of debt, give them no skills, because the college is going to be busy teaching them remedial skills. So it's extremely unfortunate that, you know, we are handicapping our kids like this. And then you wonder why you have so many criminals, so many people with dysfunctional lives, when they weren't taught the basics. I mean, if you could read, write, and do math, I would argue there's really nothing you're not able to do. You could learn anything. What can you not learn if you could read, write, and do math? Everything. You could learn how to read, write, and do math better. You could learn astronomy. You could learn chemists. You could learn science. You could learn everything. Everything can be learned with those three skills. But the schools are not giving students those, and they are giving them stuff that isn't even objectively true. So that's really cheating our students.
Six are walking out the door with a high school diploma. Wow, they go work at the store and can't read or write or do math? What are you happy about? But you want to talk about equity. You're going to drag everyone down, make sure no one succeeds so all of our children can't read, write, or do math? How about you start teaching children how to actually be human beings, not worry about sex all day long, sexualizing our children?
Very true. Kids should not be taught about sex at all. That's their parents' job. Matter of fact, I wouldn't even be putting kids in public school, but if they're going to be there, it's not the school's job to be teaching about sex. There's nothing really they need to be teaching. If you want to teach kids about sex, here it is: abstinence. Wait until marriage. There's no individual or societal drawbacks from doing that. Oh, but they have these drives and they're going to do stuff. No, they should be discouraged from doing it, as it happened in the 1950s and 1960s. And that was very healthy. We weren't having kids out of wedlock. We weren't having STDs all over the place.
Stop grooming our children. You understand? We groom our kids at home to have our values and our morals and our mindset, our beliefs. Thank you, board.
Well said again. Yes, we do groom our children. We train our children, or should be training our children. That's the job of the parents. The fact that a lot of parents let their kids into these schools to be taught this stuff it's neglect. I understand from their viewpoint, it's hard to work a job as a man and your wife, you know, stays home and takes care of the kids. That's extremely difficult on today's wages, which is on purpose. But even still, the responsibility goes to the parents. It's your job to protect your kids from being brainwashed. So it's something that needs to be done a lot more. So that's all of Jeff's videos, those two. Again, he's going to, in about a half an hour, we're going to have him on. I better get moving because we got a lot more to talk about. But yeah, a very brave activist. We need more men like him. And we'll have him on here shortly. Now let's move on to Vallejo. Vallejo this week, Guy Stevenson, who is a 27-year Marine veteran, accompanied me to Vallejo, and this was on Tuesday. Vallejo had a huge city council meeting, one of the biggest I've ever seen. Vallejo is the most diverse city in America, for those who don't know. This is where I was raised. From age, I think, like 16 to age 19, this is where I was. 25% Latino, Black, Asian, and white. It's very rare you find that. And of course, a lot of these problems that you find when only skin color is pushed, you find that in Vallejo. The audience has about 200 to 300 members, because most of them are up there to support. It's a school called Elite. And I know the superintendent of schools of Vallejo. Is she actually a very good woman? I know her hand is tied on a lot of these things. She's very smart about the NAACP, ACLU, and the people who can come after her. Because if you say the wrong thing, you are like toast. The media comes after you. These victim groups come after you. And so she actually started her own school for Black children to make sure they actually learned these skills, because the regular schools weren't teaching them. So I actually supported that. I think it started about 10 years ago. I remember going to meetings and supporting this with a lot of other friends, because I don't care what race it is. It's if you have charter school, it's better than public schools in my mind. So a lot of parents were there to support that. So the parents and students were going to get a lesson on free speech tonight. That's not what they came here for, but they were going to get it. Here is how it went down. Let's start it off.
We'll be recognized at the last community forum towards the end of this meeting.
Let's begin, too. This is Mayor Bob McConnell. I've known him, since 2012. Talked to him personally. He's a lawyer. I visited his law office and sat down and talked to him. Of course, you know, being a Democrat, there's nothing we agree on. Even if he was a Republican, we'd agree on very little. But he does have some principles that are decent. Now, he did have me taken out of a city council meeting about a year ago for bringing up the Jewish problem. They didn't give me my time. And when I wouldn't leave the podium, they dragged me out. So here he is going to show massive improvement. Let's hear. He's going to read out the guidelines here.
Community forum is an opportunity for interested members of the public to address the council on items not on this meeting's agenda. Any interested members of the public desiring to communicate with the city council as part of this first community forum will have a maximum for the first community forum of 15 minutes, with each speaker limited to 3 minutes pursuant to the requirements.
Those who go to city council meetings, pay attention because this is going to happen to you too. They try to, there's community forum on items not on the agenda. Sacramento puts that all the way to the end of the meeting. So you got to sit up till 9, 10, 11 o'clock, sometimes later in the morning to speak. Vallejo does it differently. They have 15 minutes at the start. So 5 speakers are allowed to speak for 3 minutes each at the beginning of the meeting, and then everybody else has to speak at the end. Now, in this particular meeting, they elected to have everybody in public forum go first. So there's 11 of us. They actually very kindly let all 11 of us go first, which that saved me 3 to 4 hours. That was very good. I was able to leave it a decent hour instead of, if they hadn't have done that, I would have been there till 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. So that was good.
Municipal Code Section 2.20.300. Members of the public who address the council as part of the first community forum will not be allowed to address the council again during the last community forum held prior to the adjournment of this meeting.
I think that rule was specifically designed for me because I think it was 2013. I would do that all the time. I would go speak at the first community forum, then I would go speak at the second community forum. They didn't like that very much for some reason. So now you're only limited to like one community forum. Let's continue.
The 2 minutes, we will see how many speakers we have, both in person and virtually. So let me ask Vice Mayor already, how many persons do we have in person? Because we will take them first.
Mayor, we have 11 in-person speakers. 4 of these are in the Vallejo room, and 1 is a youth.
Okay, we will take.
Now, this is the Vice Mayor Pro Tem. This is Mina Diaz. I've known Mina for, 12 years. Ever since 2012, when I got my insurance agency, I worked with her and her family. And she is doing her best. But then again, I mean, the reason why God created the order he did was because a woman doing her best will never be able to do what a decent man will be able to do in these positions. And you're going to start realizing why God's order is it's a order that we should follow here shortly.
In order, and they will have a maximum of 15 minutes. We get 5, 4, 5, or 6 in there. We will do so. But otherwise, it would require a request and approval of the council to extend it beyond the municipal code required with a time limitation of 15 minutes.
Well, I will go ahead and make that request right now that we listen to all 11 of the in-person speakers for the first community forum and then move on to the next item.
So you want that to limit it to in-person?
Now, I like Mina Diaz. I like her stance on a lot of things. She has a lot of good qualities, but she is has an NGO, non-governmental operation, and we know who pays for all of those. And this one supports Latinos coming here illegally. So, I'm pretty sure she knows that I strongly differ with her on that point. This is most women. Doesn't matter what race you are. If you're a white woman, you're fiercely for whites. If you're a black woman, you're fiercely for blacks. If you're an Asian woman, you're fiercely for Asians. And if you're Mina Diaz and a Latino, you're fiercely for Latinos. This is women's nature. They are fiercely territorial. They're loyal to their family, their race, their kids. This is their number one priority. It doesn't matter what happens. A woman will first consider that. Any controversial issue, she doesn't care about right and wrong. It's how does it affect my kids and my family? That's what she thinks about, which is very dangerous, because if that gets carried away, oh my goodness, I have watched it so many times when we've had criminals do things that were extremely wrong. And then we got the mother will come up there. And of course, Johnny is a good boy and we can listen to this. And what are you going to say to her? Ma'am, your son was not a good boy. How do you tell a grieving mother whose son was shot by the police for doing something criminal and the police were justified? How do you tell her that her son's death was justified? It's like, no, who wants that job? Nobody wants that job. I don't want that job. And it's a job none of us should really have. And we wouldn't have it if women didn't have the 19th Amendment.
Speakers only, not virtual.
This is for in-person speakers, all 11 of them, okay, for community forum.
Is the council in agreement with that? Council is. So we will take all 11 people. You will be have 3 minutes each. Go ahead and begin to call them, please. I might remind you that community forum is an opportunity to present your views. It is protected by First Amendment rights. It is not an opportunity to debate. It does not allow an opportunity to the audience to approve or disapprove of the comments. Because each individual under the Constitution of this country does have a right to express those views, even if...
Now, this is outstanding by the mayor. I strongly commend him, even though we differ on a lot of our politics, but he's absolutely 100% right on the constitutional spirit of the First Amendment. It doesn't matter if you dislike what's said. It doesn't matter if you think it's hate speech. It's free speech. If you don't like it, you could put cotton balls in your ears. You could get up and walk out, but you don't have the right to interrupt other people from hearing, and you don't have the right to interrupt the speaker. Free speech was created for speech that people hate. It's not created for, Mao and Stalin, they allowed free speech for ideas they liked, and they killed you if they didn't like what you had to say. So that's not, this is what the left is consistently doing, is they keep on trying to silence ideas they don't like, calling it, what do they call it? We know it, racist, anti-Semitism, white supremacy, Nazi, all this. So as soon as they put that label on you, you are to be silenced. And ultimately, if this continues on, you're first silenced and then you will be killed.
Do not agree with them. Please call those persons.
Okay, the first speaker is Ann C.
Yeah, that's Ann C. Her real name is Carr. She says it all the time anyways. I'm not saying anything new. She comes up there. She's been coming up there at least 12 years, probably much longer than that. And she has the typical leftist views that she gets from the Times Herald and the television and social media. She's doing her best. I doubt whether she's like a paid activist. I think she may be doing this just out of her own, you know, trying to become involved in the community. But either way, she's severely deceived on a lot of things. We're not going to listen to her comments, but she came up there.
Okay. Good evening, Council.
Actually, we will listen to a few of her comments. Just one moment.
In doing research for tonight's meeting, I found some irregularities in the zoning code from 2021. First, Mayor...
That's all we're going to listen to.
It's good to see everybody again. Consider... In 1950, if you wanted to destroy America, which was 90% white, how would you do it? Would you pass the 1965 Hart-Celler Act to legalize non-white immigration to America, to promote the Kalergi Plan to exterminate whites? Would you train non-whites to resent whites while training whites to feel guilty over the slavery that all races practice? Whites make up 8% of the world's population. The white population of California has decreased from 90% in 1950 to 30% of California's children are white today. It is the ancient strategy of divide and conquer. While the races are fighting over brainwashing, we are all enslaved by the group you cannot criticize. Or
point of order, Mayor.
Now, notice, I just got done saying, while the races are all fighting over brainwashing. No sooner did those words pop out of my mouth when this follows.
2 o'clock, state your point.
My point is that although we have free speech, I really resent the fact that any...
To Mrs. Diaz's credit, I got every single second that I was entitled to. So that's to her credit. Now, what did she do wrong? Well, first of all, if you have something to say about what I said, I'm pretty sure she knows where to contact me, number one. Number two, you could say, when I'm done, just interrupting me when I'm speaking, that right there is a violation of the free speech right there. Even if I got my time, you don't have the right to interrupt a speaker. Notice, the rest of the meeting actually went to like 1 o'clock in the morning. But for the rest of the meeting, I listened to probably, I don't know, at least half the speakers. I didn't hear her interrupt another speaker. I didn't hear her interrupt. I would say 80% of the speakers were black and brown, Latino and black. I didn't hear her interrupt a single one of them. So when it's a white man with an opinion she doesn't like, she feels free to interrupt them. But if it's people who have opinions she likes, she won't interrupt them. So it's this subtle attack on the First Amendment.
It will attack any other group of people. And that's something.
Now, didn't I just get done saying that whites are under attack? And then she attacks me saying that I'm attacking other races. Maybe she didn't understand what I said. I was speaking rather rapidly, but I was not attacking other races. I was addressing how whites are under attack, which is a fact. There's no debating this.
Really have a problem with. As a brown woman, I just...
There's the problem. Anytime you get anybody, man or woman, whose sole identity is their skin color, and that's it, we have a problem. Now, I do oppose the Kalergi plan, and I do oppose, you know, this whole multiculturalism agenda, which is nothing but white genocide. I do oppose that. But at the same time, everyone should be treated equally and fairly. And let everybody, whatever talents you were born with, I don't care what race you are, you should be able to develop those talents. But this idea that, oh, my whole concept of myself is that I'm a brown person. I don't look at myself as just a white person. I never got up in public and said we need to celebrate Italy when I'm from Italy. But that's not how women do it. Women are a little bit different.
Mr. Masano, and you will have your time because free speech is yours and you will have your time. But I cannot just sit here without telling you that I'm disgusted when we have these type of comments.
So she's telling me she's disgusted. Well, I mean, I understand that. I think a good 70% plus women are disgusted at my comments because you've been brainwashed since you were a little girl into this stuff. So I fully expect you to be disgusted. This is what we call cognitive dissonance. You have anger at hearing opinions different from your current beliefs. That's perfectly normal. Now, the question is she going to have courage and push past this initial anger and actually get to the facts and examine them and then have the courage to say, you know what? I was mistaken. To her credit, this was not like naturally developed. The media has been brainwashing people for well over 100 years. So it's important to be patient with people like this. They are doing the best she can. She honestly believes that there is a threat to her and her family and her race from me. That's what she senses. She's completely incorrect, but that's how she perceives this. And of course, when a woman thinks that, what does she do? She goes into mama bear mode, doesn't she? Oh, yes, she does. She responds. And women, when they're in mama bear mode, there is no speaking. Like, it's just like, it's fight. It's a fight. And there's no retreat. And women may not have been built like with the stronger physical strength. Maybe God did that. But once they get into a fight, good luck trying to like talk them out of that stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you'll notice at the end I said I favor repealing the 19th Amendment, which maybe a good deal of the audience didn't know what that was referring to, but that's the women's right to vote, and we wouldn't have even had that interruption had women never been given the right to vote. We wouldn't have most of these problems, because if all the men of America of all races alone voted, a good 70-80% plus of the problems would be fixed. Now, it's not women's fault. It's the men's fault because it's male weakness that allows this problem to continue. If all the men in America said we don't want women voting, women wouldn't be voting yesterday.
Okay. Your point is that of a personal privilege, and you're free to make that. It does not.
Mayor McConnell here is going to interrupt, and he is going to correct the record for her. It's very well done, although he tries to, like Pontius Pilate, plays to the crowd, saying what I'm saying is stupid, and it's silly, and all this.
There, the ability, legal ability of the speaker to say what he says, no matter how much you might disagree with it, or no matter how stupid it might be, but
I fully understand that.
Notice how the audience, there's a lot of laughter of agreement from the audience when he said, basically what I'm saying is stupid, which if you examine what I said, there's nothing stupid about it. It's facts. Just because they have been exposed to those facts does not make it stupid. What's stupid is calling something stupid that you don't understand. That's what's stupid.
I think that it's important that we send a message to people that are here and people that are watching us at home that we don't share these opinions. So he's free to speak.
Okay. I think.
Well, and that's fine. If you don't share the opinions, that's fine. But guess what? The whole purpose of community forum and all that, we don't need every member on the city council to let everybody know what you think of all the comments by all the speakers. That's not what you're up there for. You're up there to listen and let everybody else listen. Now, she knows when I speak, if everybody in Vallejo thought the way I thought, she knows she's very smart. Women are very intuitive. She knows she would not be up on that city council whenever the next election rolls around. So she's protecting herself.
You've made that point. You've made that point, Vice Mayor, and please recall that free speech does protect hate speech. Go ahead.
Key concept there. He said free speech protects hate speech. That needs to be understood in every meeting in America.
Thank you. Brian Masano of MasanoNews.com. Those who value truth, virtue, and wisdom are encouraged to turn into my radio show, The Ryan Masano Show on Speak Free Radio. It airs on Saturdays from 2 to 4 Pacific Time. 2,000 years ago, a man denounced the religious rulers of his day, rebuking their greedy, money-loving stealing from the common man. This man has had the greatest positive impact on humanity of any man in history. It's greater than all the kings, queens, generals, and rulers combined. What happened to the innocent truth-teller? He was lied about, slandered as a traitor, and crucified. Well, the same group of people behind this are still stealing from people, lying to people, and deceiving people. If Jesus and the apostles walked the earth today, what would they be called? They would be called Nazis, anti-Semites, white supremacists, Holocaust deniers, racist, bigots, sexist, homophobes, and Islamophobes. Just as Jesus was slandered as treasonous and mobs were whipped up against him, the same Talmudic Jews who put Christ to death are busy protecting their Federal Reserve and income tax money toys by viciously slandering those of us who tell the truth about them. Is your mind controlled by the media? What does the media say daily? What are the worst threats to America? White supremacy, racism, anti-Semitism, Nazis? Do you think this way? If you do, your mind is owned like hundreds of millions of other Americans by the media. Sad so many minds are controlled by likes and dislikes on social media. 1% of this nation rules. The 4% who are the lackeys of the 1% are the celebrities, nearly all politicians, the media, and many more. Their job is to deceive, distract, and intimidate both those who try to expose them and everyone else. 5% of us are trying to expose the 1% to wake the sleeping 90%, and 4% targets us. The owners of the Federal Reserve, isn't it amazing you can't find their names on Google, are ruled by the Cabal and they obey the Talmud. These are the 1%. The Talmud legalizes lying, cheating, stealing, murder, rape, homosexuality, transgenderism, child molestation, and much more. You can empty all the prisons and jails on earth and the combined crimes of the criminals will not equal the crimes of the Talmudic Jewish owners of the Federal Reserve, who are behind the biggest death machine in world history, the 100 million murdered by communism. Thank you.
All right, and the next one.
The next speaker is Lily H. Better that they can start.
So, yeah, on the bright side of things, they did allow me to complete my full remarks with all my time, even though that interruption was not called for. But, you know, it's a matter of conditioning all the city councils in America that you don't have the right to interrupt speakers. You don't have the right to deprive speakers of their time to speak. If you don't exercise a muscle, it atrophies. Well, if we're not using our First Amendment rights, it's going to atrophy. So it's extremely important that we get up there and speak this truth, because this is something no one but the wicked will be hurt by it, and plenty of other people. Every one of the 330 million Americans is benefited by this truth being spread. Even if they're a wicked person, they're benefited because their wicked schemes will be taken care of for them. So anyways, that takes care of all of that. Let's move on. There was a couple of articles that I wanted to talk about. We got about 10 minutes left before Jeff is going to join us at the hour. So the first article I wanted to talk about, see, maybe we could fit this in into a couple minutes. This was a tweet it came across. Shadow of Ezra tweeted this on Twitter. And by the way, I'm blocked on Twitter, but I did find this interesting. So this is about the Kennedy assassination.
Aside from 1963, President John F. Kennedy it doesn't say Federal Reserve note. It says United States note. That means the U.S. government, which every government has the ability to do. Canada used to do it. Germany did it. A whole bunch of other places did it. And guess what? They got really good results. You know what they did? They managed to go ahead and keep any debt at a very reasonable and payable level. Now, this United States note, that's not an interest. It's not a private bank. And JFK was dead within 6 months of issuing this $5 note. We could solve the problems that we face right now. I have said over and over, like a broken record, the head of the snake is the financial system. The reason why they hate people like Gaddafi, Saddam Hussein, John F. Kennedy, oh, and the last one, a man named Adolf Hitler. He outlawed usury. Jesus didn't like usury either, aside from 1963.
That is the root of the problem. It's all about money. Qui bono, follow the money. And it even says in scripture, I think it's 1 Timothy 6:6, that the love of money is the root of all evil. Money itself, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, if you support yourself, support your family, make money doing honest work, there's nothing wrong with that. The problem is when you start to do the wrong thing to get money, which is what the owners of our Federal Reserve have done. There's nothing they won't do. They have murdered. They have started wars. This has continued on for over a century. So just wanted to go over that. Kennedy in June of 1963, he issued his executive order 11110 to produce $4 billion worth of $2 and $5 bills. And the bills supported by silver reserves stored in the Treasury's vaults were issued without debt or interest. The seigniorage or profit from coinage went directly to the U.S. government rather than to the privately owned U.S. Federal Reserve Bank. The issuance of notes was part of Kennedy's broader strategy to diminish the influence of the U.S. Federal Reserve Bank. November 22nd, Kennedy was dead. So that was the first point I wanted to go over. Second one, probably end with this. I don't think we'll have time to get to the third one, is in America, we had fewer babies born in 2023 than in any year since the year I was born, 1979. That's a huge problem. So a couple details on that. You need 2.1 births per woman to have replacement. If you're at 1.6, you're well below what you need. Also, Islam's having like 3.1. I think Israel's having like 3.3. 1.62, that's very low. And of course, I mean, it's very hard for the man on one income to support a wife having a lot of children. That's a difficult thing right now by design. So that is a very big problem. We need to get that. I think in 1958, the birth rate was about 3.58 for American women. And it has been just dropping. Abortion has done it. Pornography, homosexuality, birth control. Those are the big issues cutting into the birth rate. But if you're not having babies, your nation is literally dying. I think the first comment on there was Andrew Tate saying white people are going extinct. And when you try to encourage them to have babies, they call you names. He's not really the one. I mean, when you're pimping out women, you're kind of like not a credible voice, but, yeah, it's very troubling because, from a man's perspective, I'm 18, 19, 20, if you're a good man in America and you want to get married, it's not easy to do that because not only have women been conditioned to go get a job and go to school, but also men, vast majority of men are watching sports ball. They're using drugs. They're into pornography. So they're not really fit to lead a family. And you know, I think a lot of us men, I mean, I don't know if I know five men that I could count on my hand today who have never viewed pornography. That's a huge issue for men. I would say that's one of the top three issues for America right there. And of course, the same people who fund pornography are the exact same ones who control the Federal Reserve, because it's a carefully designed strategy where if they are able to stop men from getting married because they don't make enough money, then they divert that sexual energy elsewhere, and you could easily destroy the nation that way. And that has been a strategy that's been ongoing for quite some time. Let's see. There was actually another. So yeah, I posted this earlier today. I said, these big Jewish corporations, they're constantly warning men against sexual harassment. And if you work for a big corporation, who among us hasn't had to take training on sexual harassment? Mine, I think it's like the longest training I take. It's like an hour long on sexual harassment. And of course, in that sexual harassment, what do? They train you that you're not allowed to criticize transgenderism and homosexuality. Now, that's totally not what the First Amendment was set up for. It was not to allow these big corporations to lecture and brainwash us not to criticize their pet vices. And why do they like those so much? They like them because by pushing those agendas, it keeps us divided, childless, marriageless, and easy to control. Jews own so they're these big Jewish corporations. And I mean, a good 90% of all the big corporations at least are owned by Jews. When you go looking into the money who controls it, you come across the same names every single time. So these big corporations, they got this training on, case in point, let me see it. I don't even know if I remember one, but I mean, it's pretty simple. It's the same outline basically every single time. Harry was in the break room and with Sally, and Harry told a joke that was risque and Sally heard it. What should Sally do? So of course, if I want to get through the training, I have to say Sally should report it, which don't get me wrong either. I don't think a man should be doing that. Men shouldn't be ogling women. They should not be, you know, making lewd remarks, doing all these jokes. I'm totally against all that. The problem is the corporations are the last people to be lecturing us on this stuff when they, out of the same mouth, they're telling that you not to have, to sexually discriminate. They're also supporting pornography. So yeah, please don't lecture me on sexual discrimination when you are pay money for porn websites. Please just don't do that. It's hypocrisy at its finest. So they control usury and making it nearly impossible for a man on one income. They actively work to hijack the natural remedy and outlet that God gave men for their natural sexual desires, while then making it seem like men who rarely have outlets for their sexual desires in healthy marriage are wicked for responding to sexual cues. So, and I made it very clear, like a man shouldn't be ogling a woman. He shouldn't be doing anything with a woman privately unless he's married to her or courting her. The same Jewish corporations are actively encouraging women to pursue colleges and careers while they discourage them from obeying their husbands, marrying, and having a lot of children. On top of that, they're encouraging women to dress like whores, act like sluts, and to think and act as older Jewish feminists like Betty Friedan, Susan Sontag, Gloria Allred, Gloria Steinem, Danielle Steele, and many others instruct them too. So I was pretty happy. The response to that, I got about 10,000 views on Gab. But that's a message that really needs to get out, because we need to understand these forces that are allied against us. And I guess it looks like we are actually going to have time to get around to our last item. I thought it was pretty interesting. It's not really on our major problems. It's kind of almost like off topic here, but I thought I'd go into it. It was pretty interesting. You know, I think if you really think about it, Americans have been taking showers for about 100 years. So you figure before 1900, like no Americans were really taking showers. You were bathing, you were doing Little House on the Prairie. You got a little bucket with hot water and some soap, and that's how you washed yourself. Of course, they weren't putting all these toxins into their body either, so they probably smelled a whole lot better. So the question is taking a shower every day, does it give you a health benefit? Obviously one of the main reasons why a lot of us do it is for, smell. definitely not washing for periods of time can do that. But anyways, this article was from the Jewish New York Post, and they said, broken clock is right twice a day, so you do get stuff on some of these. But it says, experts say the daily shower has no proven health benefit, dismissing the dowsing as a socially accepted practice geared towards staving off accusations of funkiness. As A-listers like Jake, of course, they got to cite their celebrities. So someone at the BBC, which is also controlled by Jews, says, why are we washing? Mostly because we're afraid somebody else will tell us that we're smelling. That was from some environmentalist, Donna Doc McCarthy. The prostitute state author only hoses off once per month. Wow. To help the environment. Now, I don't think I've ever done that. Once a month. I mean, sometimes I'll do two times a week. If you do baby wipes and all that, I think you could get by as long as you use tolerable deodorant without all the toxins they have in those deodorants too. So that I thought that was pretty interesting, because I'd say probably a good 90% of Americans today are showering daily. So this idea that maybe showering every day is not a good idea, it's fairly intriguing. So it goes on to say, while abstaining from daily showers might seem like antisocial behavior, medical experts are inclined to lean toward agreeing with earthy types like McCarthy, saying that the modern obsession with cleanliness can actually be hazardous to one's health. Manhattan dermatologist Dr. Julie Rusak, no indication on early life status, previously told the Post that prolonged and daily showers could strip away the skin's microbiome, which plays a role in protecting the skin and is also extremely important in overall health of the body. Let's also not forget the skin is the biggest organ in the entire body. So water a lot of times has fluoride, which you don't want to be drinking fluoride. You don't even want fluoride on your skin. It's very dangerous. It could lead to dementia and Alzheimer's, from what I understand. Chemist David Whitlock was so adamant about preserving this dermal barrier that the bathing abstainer didn't shower for 12 years. Now that's too much. Wow. Opting to spray himself with good bacteria that he claims neutralizes the body's smell-making chemicals. When asked about addressing critics, he told Vice, and of course you get the usual suspects, Vice, environmentalists, BBC, they can't do an article on anything without bringing in a slew of other Jewish-controlled operations. Tell anyone who mocks you that they are betraying profound ignorance of the skin microbiome and then walk away. The anti-splash backlash comes as people are actually showering more than ever before. In 2021, researchers at Harvard Health found that 66% of Americans shower every day, while a 2005 report claims that it is common for Brits to shower once or twice per day. I think it's more than that. The change has come mostly over the past 100 years. It was not planned. Experts have chalked up this phenomenon to the increasing prevalence of showers, which became common in U.S. homes circa the 1920s, and then their across-the-pond counterparts in the 1950s. If you go 100 years back, we didn't shower every day because a shower was not a normal thing to have, declared Kristen Graham Hansen, a professor in Denmark at Aalborg University's Department of the Built Environment. We don't shower because of health. We shower because it's a normal thing to do. That's right. So it looks like we are at the hour right now. We are done with that. Looking forward to having Jeff Perrine on the show. And again, this is Speak Free Radio. I am your host, Ryan Masano. And this is the Ryan Masano Show. We are on Saturday from 2 to 4 Eastern Standard Time. We are on from 5 to 7. Actually, it's 2 to 4 Pacific Standard Time, 5 to 7 Eastern Standard Time. So let's see if we can get Jeff on. And let's see here. Should be having him coming along. Excellent. Jeff is here. And hey, Jeff, good to have you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. You're
right on, man.
Very loud
and clear. Thanks for having me on your show, Ryan.
No problem at all. Glad to have you. We are really happy to have you. I played your clips before, and is saying that we need a lot more men in America doing what you've been doing. And you haven't just started doing this. You've been doing this for years. I went over what your speaking out has done. And then just the fact, all the heat that you've been taking. I'm glad you were able to come on, because I know you've been a little bit under the weather and stuff. So I hope you're healing up better. How's that coming along?
That's going good, man. I mean, I took my medicine. I don't really like to take pharmaceuticals, but I did have to take some Sudafed today because I just couldn't breathe, you know. But I'm doing all right. I'm about halfway through my prescription, so it's holding me tight. I'm not hurting to breathe right now, and my sinuses are clear, so I feel somewhat normal. I give myself a B+, so I'm with it. I'm just happy to be here. You know what I mean?
Very nice. Yeah. Very much appreciate that. Yeah. Cause fighting your way through some of these is not easy to do. But to start off with, Jeff, I think we met at Gavin Newsom's house. I want to say back in 2020 when we were protesting the masks. Does that sound right to you?
It might have been earlier than that, but yeah, I think we met each other at Gavin's house. I know you were at the event where all the ladies were arrested at the Capitol as well. I was there when all those people were arrested at the Capitol. All the mama bears for the COVID vaccine when they had the mask mandates and stuff at the Capitol. So, I've been around you and you've been around me probably a lot longer than we realized. But yeah, I think we met for real and exchanged numbers somewhere around 2019, 2020.
Yeah. Four years. It has passed in a flash. And it's amazing. This is why In Real Activism is so valuable. I think getting off the internet and just going out and participating, because when that happens, we're able to like meet people and kind of like form our own movements, which is a really, really good, good happening. But I wanted to get from you, Jeff, if you could kind of go over like your background, if you want to go over, growing up a little bit. What I really want to have you comment on is, how did you start becoming aware of your evolution? I don't know if you were a liberal at one time, how you became a conservative, and how you went from being a conservative into learning about what you know today about who's behind things, the agendas. So if you could kind of go over that, the entire transition, that's, I really want to share with the audience how that happened.
Sure. So I'm a native Sacramentan. I spent 39 years of my life in Sacramento, born and raised, family. I'm like a sixth generation Sacramentan. I grew up, I had kind of a struggle life. You know, I was from a broken home. My mother divorced my father when I was age 5. And so around age 7, I moved in with my grandparents because I was dealing with some, I guess you could say physical abuse. Stepdad wasn't too nice. He was kind of taking his abuse out on me, whether it was substance abuse or whatever. So my grandparents were kind enough to bring me in, which is where I think I got a lot of my quality, upbringing from, because I learned traditional values. I learned how to treat elders with respect, others with respect, open doors, yes, ma'am, yes, sir. Just treat people as human beings, more or less, don't necessarily, judge people by, by the book or by the cover. You got to get to know people, because I grew up in a harsh childhood. It wasn't easy. So, I grew up in Citrus Heights. And when I moved back to my mother's, when I was about 13, my stepfather had passed away. I kind of got involved with drugs because my family was poor. So I was selling pot, and doing my thing, got into a little bit of trouble, used to listen to rap music, basically acted like I was a black guy, hung out with a bunch of blacks and Mexicans, was always treated like crap by them. But I had to deal with it because I was a minority amongst these groups of people. So I tried to blend in. I went to college. I pursued a bachelor's degree. I got 2 of those from Sacramento State. A bachelor's degree in communication studies and a bachelor's degree in business administrations. First one in my family to go to college and graduate. I've been with my wife for 20 years. I had my first child when I was 30. I had my second child when I was 34. And what really woke me up, I would say prior to my having my children, I would say I was more of a libertarian. I really didn't care what people did as long as it didn't affect me. You know, I smoked pot. I just did whatever I wanted to do. Not like I was having, you know, crazy. I wasn't having any affairs on my wife. Obviously, I was devoted to my wife, so that was never an issue. But I did smoke pot for 25 years. I've been sober for almost 2 years now off substances, marijuana pretty much. And what really woke me up to what was going on with politics was my children. So my son, when I first had my boy, it was the vaccines. I didn't know anything about vaccines. I was actually pro-vaccine going into 2014. You know, I'd gotten my flu shot. I got my Tdap because my wife's OBGYN told me, you know, hey, you don't want to give your wife the flu when she's pregnant. It might cause whatever their BS lies that they use to get you to go get the shot. And so I go get my shots, and then my son is born. And the first day, they bring in this like cart of needles, and they're like, all right, we're coming to give your kid his vaccines. And I was okay with it. I'm like, all right, you know, this is what I did as a kid. That's fine. He got his first round of vaccines, and we brought him home, and his poop the next day was like green and stinky. It was very, it wasn't normal. It wasn't like what you'd been told would come out of a child's stomach, which is normally like black and charcoal-y from ingesting like the fecal when they're inside the stomach and the womb. So it was like green and stinky. Mm-hmm. And so about 3 months go by, 6 months go by, and we go to see the pediatrician again, and he gets his next round of vaccines. And my son had a seizure on the table right after they gave him his MMR vaccine.
Wow.
And he's seizing, right? And he's like, he's shuddering, he's shaking, his eyes are rolling back in his head. He's, you know, got his teeth, he's grinding his gums because he has no teeth, obviously. He's grinding his gums. His hands are all balled up and his toes are curling. He looked miserable, dude. Like, I was like, what the heck did you just do to my child? And the doctor says to me, oh, this is a normal response. Sometimes children respond to the vaccines with a, you know, petite mal or a grand mal seizure. It's nothing to worry about. It's normal. And I said, hey, 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 like I, right when he said petite mal or grand mal seizure, I was an EMT for 2 years. And so I said, seizures are never good. I said, that's brain damage. And the doctor goes, well, you know, take a look at this insert. And so he hands me this insert, which is what came in the vaccine. And he says, look here, you know, line 2, it says seizures are a response to vaccines. And so I went home with this insert and started reading it. And I started reading all these crazy side effects that were actually in the inserts of the vaccines that you never would see. Like when before getting the vaccine, you'd have thought he would have handed this to me and say, hey, these are the possibilities of what could happen if your son's vaccinated. But instead it was the other way around. And so once that happened, the next time I was supposed to bring in my son at the 1 year, I refused vaccines, right? I said, no, I've been doing research for the last 6 months. I don't want
to. Really quick, Jeff, if I can interject here real quick. What year was that?
2014 was the year my son was born.
Okay. Okay. So that's 6 years.
So this is like this is the heart of like prior to the vaccine movement becoming like really big in Sacramento. You didn't see people protesting at the Capitol, none of that. It was just, you know, normal nomenclature for you to be like, yeah, I got my kid vaccinated. It's normal. Like that's what you're doing because that's what the doctor said. Pediatrician told me to do it. So that's what I'm going to do.
Okay.
And so the one year checkup, which is basically a vaccination, you'll notice when you see your pediatrician, basically every time you take your kid to the pediatrician, all they're doing is vaccinating your kid. They're not checking up on them. They measure their head. They measure the weight. They do all that. But the goal is to stick your kid with vaccines. And I told the pediatrician, yeah, we've thought about it. And we decided we no longer want to vaccinate our kid. And he said, well, if you choose to not vaccinate your child, I'm going to have to drop you from my care. And I said, what? And he said, we keep a 95% plus vaccination rate with my office. And we can't afford to have another person on our register that refuses vaccines. And I said, what? Like, I didn't understand it. So I said, whatever, dude, drop me. I'll find another doctor. So a few years go by, and my son, we go to get him into school. And I'm being told that I can't put my son in school without vaccines.
That's absurd.
And so this was like the eye opener for me, because first it was the pediatrician. Now it's like the school. And I said, well, what about HIPAA laws? I mean, you don't have the right to ask me if my kid's been vaccinated. I thought HIPAA existed. And they said, well, you know, the state mandates that your kids are vaccinated. And that was the first thing that, well, I said, what do you mean the state mandates it? And that was the catalyst that woke me up to going, well, who is it that's doing this? So then I started to discover people like Richard Pan, and I started to discover these other politicians, these senators, and these people that were promoting vaccines. And so that was the catalyst that woke me up. And then it just opened Pandora's box. It was like, okay, it's primarily Democrats. It's primarily liberals. It's primarily left-leaning progressives that are promoting this stuff, right? Because all the women and children and men that I met online that were anti-vax or at least pro-choice were conservatives. Mm-hmm. So that was what opened my eyes to conservatism and right-leaning politics, was ultimately the free choice of vaccines and school choice and stuff like that. And then ultimately, as time progressed, I started going to congressional hearings, meetings at the Capitol, protesting vaccine mandates, SB 277, SB 276, which was the mandating of all vaccines to go to school. You know, it was full-fledged attack on children and homes. And if you didn't get them, you couldn't go to school. And so that was the progress that opened me up to politics and led me to basically becoming a conservative or pro-choice.
Nice. You know, it's interesting too, because I noticed I was born in 79, and I saw the thing, and if I remember correctly, it said we needed 8 vaccines in 1979, and like in 1995, it was like up to 24, and God knows what it's at today. So these kids, they're constantly be given these, forced to take these vaccines. I know my brother, his son, born in the last 2 or 3 years, he, fortunately was able, and his daughter, they didn't get any vaccines, which is fantastic. But on top of that too, there's other professions, like whatever you work for. I know I was in the military, and they had like a gauntlet as I'm walking through in boot camp. It's like 2 needles on each arm for like 6 shots, and then the final one was like an anthrax shot that you couldn't even sit down correctly because it was so painful. But yeah, so they've been hard at work at this. I know Eustace Mullins wrote a book called Murder by Injection, which does a pretty good job of going over the entire 100-year history virtually of vaccines. But that's amazing that vaccines was what actually turned you conservative. But I suppose a few things would really get the attention of a parent, like your child having a seizure after a vaccine. I'm pretty sure that would wake up quite a few people. That's incredible. I mean, that parents have, and this, you're not the only one. I'm sure many parents go through this, but only a few actually bravely stick around and actually do something about it. A lot of them just say, oh, that's what the doctor said. I should be able to just take that.
So right about now, Ryan, it's 74 vaccines by the time you're leaving school. So wow. If you follow the mandate and get the yearly flu shot and all the mandated vaccines that they require, it's generally 74 to 79 vaccines by the time you're your senior year. And that doesn't count if you go to college. So in California, in a lot of colleges, they mandate the COVID vaccine every year. So if you were to get all of those and go to 4 years of college, you're looking at almost 80 vaccines by the time you're 22 years old. So
that's insane.
It's pretty bad, and not to mention like circumcision, right? That was another one that really woke me up, was when they circumcised my boy. And of course I circumcised my son because I'm circumcised, and I thought, hey, I'm circumcised. I don't know why the heck I would care what my boy's penis looked like. You know, hey, I don't want his penis to look different than mine. I didn't get it, But then you start researching circumcision and how it affects the limbic system and how they choose to vaccinate your son by about eight or circumcise your kid by 8 days old. And they strap your kid down in this little body mold where it's like a little plastic mold with their arms up above their head, and they strap them in and they circumcise them, and it destroys the limbic system. And if you look at the limbic system, that's logic and reasoning. And you start to realize maybe the real reason why our country is so screwed up is because everyone circumcises their boys, and that destroys logic and reasoning, right? Because prior to the 1900s, circumcision was not normal. And they used World War I and claiming, oh, you know, you're getting your penis dirty, it's all cleanliness, yada, yada. Well, how come for the 10,000 years before that humans were running around talking and going to war and doing all that, did we not circumcise? There was never a sanitary issue. So I started looking into that and realizing that the limbic system is destroyed, and not to mention the fact that your child feels abandoned because your parents, they remove your child from you and they do not let you witness this ceremony, basically. It's child torture. And they took my child away from me, didn't let me hold his hand, didn't let me be there for him, and they circumcised him. And that was another eye-opener for me, was when I realized you just possibly damaged my son's limbic system. And that's logic and reasoning. Logic and reasoning are huge. We wonder why there's no critical thinking in this country anymore. Maybe because they're destroying the limbic system of all the youth before they even have a chance to become a child.
That's a profound, I never really thought about that. You know, it's only been in the past like 2 or 3 years that I've really given serious thought to circumcision. Of course, none of us as babies has a choice in it. It's gone without you even knowing it. But yeah, that's really fascinating because, as I understand it, Jeff, the original circumcision that was done by the Jews in the Old Testament was not even close to being as barbaric and savage as what we deal with today, which is practically, I want to say it's a good 90% of American men have had this done to us. If I have a choice, I really don't see myself doing that. The only advantage that I saw that might make it worth it is like if you're living out in the sticks or in the wilderness or some off-grid place and you're like really in, you know, no washing and no cleaning for long stretches of time, like months or years, like living like Robinson Crusoe, perhaps circumcision may help to keep that region more sanitary and general hygiene. That's the only advantage that I saw. But even that, I mean, how likely is it that we'll be in a situation like that? I would say it's pretty unlikely.
Well, that's the major reason why it covers up, though. See, that's what people don't understand, is that skin is there to cover up your penis and cover up the urinary tract hole, etc. You pull it back and then you clean it off if you really needed to. You pull it back. I mean, let's also mention the fact that it removes a whole gape amount of nerve endings. It is a large amount of nerve endings, and not to mention the fact that the skin lubricates the penis naturally. So this is why people are forced to use lubrication to have intercourse, is because the skin, the foreskin, is designed to be a lubricant. It lubricates and allows for easier penetration. So they are destroying nerve endings and forcing you to use lubricants like petroleum jelly, which is probably another horrible thing to be putting on your body. So you're rubbing petroleum jelly on your genitals and then entering it into your wife's vagina.
Yeah.
How good is that for you? So everything we've been convinced of ultimately comes back to a certain group of people. We all know who they are, and they've convinced us to poison ourselves in all aspects. And it's happened in a form of a way to where they don't even do it anymore. They've got us doing it to ourselves because it's now been a pattern over generations, to where you're like, oh, well, my dad's circumcised, I'm going to circumcise myself, and I'm going to circumcise my kids. And you don't realize that you're just falling into a pattern of destruction. And it's just destroying your body. It's not good.
Yeah. You know, and that makes me curious too, because what's your take? I mean, don't Jews circumcise? I mean, that whole barbaric practice of their rabbis cleaning off the circumcision, which is pretty disgusting. But it seems, because I'm thinking, like, if it's an advantage to not be circumcised, then from what I, unless we're being lied to, but it seems to me that the Jews all circumcise themselves too. So that kind of, it's just a question I had. I don't know if you have any insight on that.
So that's always something I've always questioned, but I think what that has to do is something about being marked or something. I never really looked too much into that because I never got too deep into the rabbinical practice. I understand what they do, the mitzvah, where they do the oral circumcision, etc. But I never really understood why they did it. I thought it had something to do with being marked as God's chosen people originally, so they could separate themselves from the barbarians or the unclean or whatever, because it's another one of those lies. But think about it. Jews do not allow themselves to get blood transfusions. You know, they don't take the vaccines. They don't do a lot of this stuff that they promote us to do. So even though Israel is one of the most vaccinated countries in the world, the Orthodox rabbinical groups of Jews did not take the vaccine. And I really don't. I think a lot of it also had to do with the fact that circumcising eliminates the nerve endings, which is going to push you away from masturbation. So I think that's kind of what it was behind. The same with the, you know, circumcision of women in the Muslim practice. It's to ruin the pleasure of sex, and it's supposed to be sex is only for reproduction. So I think it's ultimately about making sex not about pleasure, but about reproducing.
Interesting. Well, what's interesting with that is I'd say a good, I mean, I can't name 5 to 10 men on my both hands that haven't looked at pornography and dealt with masturbation at some point in their life. But what's interesting to me is that, you know, it seems 90% of American men, I would say, are probably circumcised. But I think with the information that you presented, I think more and more people are becoming aware. And it seems like the rates of circumcision are going down, from what I understand. But yeah, it's interesting because, yeah, masturbation, it seems to be pretty predominant. It doesn't seem to be uncommon at all at men who are circumcised. So I don't know. It's pretty interesting to look at. But I wanted to also discuss with you, once you started waking up, you know, a lot of people, they wake up and then they wake up and they do nothing, but that's not what happened with you. What happened with you is you woke up and then you started acting. This happened with me too, like 12 years ago. And you start like speaking out in public and you kept doing it until eventually, right now you're pretty well known, across America for the efforts that you've done. I played both of your videos in Lincoln. And, when you made the speech on, DIED, diversity, equity, and inclusion. But I wonder if you could go into what inspired you to do that. I mean, with your son, I know you shared that, but was there anything that specifically inspired you to get up and speak or go to these rallies? What fears did you have? Because I think a lot of us, we talk about, you know, that, you know, men need to do this, but we don't talk as much as maybe we should, that we deal with a lot, at least I do. I mean, we deal with fears, we deal with doubts, we deal with anxieties. I mean, going up there and speaking, this is not easy to do. You're going into hostile environments with audiences that are likely to boo you. You will be interrupted. Antifa will be sent after you. And so I wonder if, I wanted to get into a little bit later on your experience with Antifa, being doxxed, what's all been done to you, because I know you've experienced a lot more than most have in that area. But even before we got into that, if you would go into, you know, what was your mindset when you first started? And then what, you know, if you had doubts or fears, what helped you to overcome all that?
So originally, like I said, when I was giving my introduction, I'm a communications major. So public speaking was very normal for me within the college atmosphere, and I excelled. I was always, so growing up, I was always the captain of the baseball team. I was always the leader of every group I was a part of. So being the lead or the spearhead to a movement or just doing things and saying how I felt was never an issue. Again, back to my childhood, being abused by my stepfather physically, I stood no chance. But what I learned to do was articulate myself in a way to where I could say how I felt without being abused. So I would try to find words that could hurt or would be heard by him without being physical, right? So as I got older, I honed my skills, especially with going to college and making it through the indoctrination camps of Sacramento State. Because a lot of it started in school. When I was given certain subjects to talk about, I always chose topics that the teacher was like, are you really going to talk about that? That's not a good choice to choose to talk about. It's not a popular, you know, stance. And I went, well, that's why I'm choosing it, because I'm in an argumentative communications class and I'm not going to pick something everyone's going to agree upon. I'm going to choose something that I feel passionate about, that I can articulate my message in a manner that might change people's opinions. You don't go to college to just regurgitate what you've been told. You go to school to challenge yourself and challenge people's ideas and have open debates. And so I always enjoyed debate and conversation and rebutting people's arguments. I've always been that way, whether it's with my grandpa or my mother or my brothers or my friends. I was always that guy. So I never had a fear of public speaking.
That's awesome.
And what really was a catalyst for me was how there was nobody that had the gall to stand up and speak. And so one day I got this bright idea. I'm going to go up and speak. I'm going to go to the city council meeting and I'm going to talk. And I got a standing ovation. But I was also one of only like two or three people to speak with the stance that I had, right? Everybody else was against us and our stance. And so I was like, huh. I mean, I've been booed before when I, you know, in baseball, when we win and we're in a visitor's house and we win and they boo us or whatever, et cetera. And so when I would go into these meetings, I looked at it as a challenge. You know, my objective was to present myself in a manner that was intelligent, articulate, communicative, you know, just somebody that wasn't your traditional going in and screaming vulgarities and profanities and sounding like an uneducated retard. I didn't want to go in there and present myself as that. And so the more I did public speaking, the better I got. And what I noticed was I started to get a following of other men and women in the community that maybe felt the same way I did, but never thought they could do it. And they would be contacting me and say, hey, you know, are you going to go to this next meeting? If you're going to go, I'll go. And so what I became was this like motivation to these normal people, these moms and these dads, these brothers and uncles and sisters and grandpas that probably never would have spoke. But because they saw a normal father who was at a state capitol with his children, like I used to bring my kids to these events because I was a homeschool father. I owned my own business. So I would bring my kids to the Capitol. And when I would go speak at the Capitol, I'd have my kids in tow, right? I'd have my daughter in my arms or my son in my arm. And mothers would be like, this guy is like standing up for us. He's doing what's right. And he speaks so eloquently. And then over time, after a few years, I started to garner a following. It became a point where I could have rallies at the Capitol and I would get a few hundred people that would show up to hear me talk, which was crazy. I never thought I'd ever be able to have an event at the Capitol and people would show up and support me and we'd make it a day at the Capitol and we'd all go talk to Congress. And so it was really just the fact that I was helping people. That was really the main motivator to what I was doing as well. I finally had a place. I felt like I'm not selling drugs. I'm not playing sports. I'm not watching TV, playing video games. I'm actually out with my community. And it's with normal people who feel the same way as me. And I felt like I was making a difference. So ultimately, it was just the motivational factor of getting normal people up off the couch that felt like me, who maybe only felt they could talk on Facebook or Instagram and never get out and voice themselves. But when they saw a normal father with a father of kid married, getting up and speaking, these normal people started to join me. So I think that was really the huge motivator for me, was just getting the community involved.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's interesting too, because they found that the number one fear of people, even above death, which is number two, is public speaking. So at a funeral, your average person would prefer to be in the casket than giving the eulogy, which if you think about that, that's pretty crazy. But you're, the fact that you and I thought that was fascinating too, because, you know, when kids are in abusive situations early on in life, as you discussed that you were frequently, when you go to your local jails and stuff, those are your criminals. Those are the people, your ne'er-do-wells. And the fact that you, encountered that, endured it, and came out better, not bitter. That's pretty amazing. I know, being able to do that is not easy, because pretty much your formative years, most kids, it's like how they are treated by their parents that in their mind tells them how the world is. So if your parents are loving and kind and patient and gentle, then you think that the world is loving and kind and patient and gentle. And if your parents are like abusive and cruel and harsh and draconian, then you think the world is abusive and cruel and harsh and draconian. So it's extreme, but there are people, like, we're from wildly different backgrounds. I mean, I was the oldest of 18 children, raised by this my parents in church. And the funny thing is that you had a fearlessness. I had, oh my goodness, I had like all kinds of fears. But I think it also probably had to do with the fact a lot of the my church was a wonderful church, but unfortunately, women were able to speak in that. And I think that emotional control really affected not only myself, but a lot of men. It kind of stunted their development. But yeah, I thought that was pretty remarkable how you became, you know, a pretty incredible activist after enduring all that and then seeing a lot of this stuff. So if you also wanted to go into what year you first started speaking out, and then if you wanted to detail also what opposition you got from either activists, city councils, members of the community. I know when you went to Sacramento, you know all of it. Like, I'm coming in contact with people, and you're like, you knew them well. Like, oh yeah, this reporter, I know her, Dave Kempa, and who else? The Twitter accounts that try to target anybody who's
Corwin, all those people.
Yeah, you knew all of them, and I was coming on the scene. I'm like, why is my name turning up on Twitter all over the place? Who is this network of people? But yeah, you'd been there, done that, and you'd come across them, and they really went after you. But yeah, if you could detail when you started, and then just, if you also want to detail at the same time, you mentioned how you became like a conservative, but then when the transition happened from when you were a conservative to when you started realizing, hey, you know what? I'm being played here. Both sides are controlled, and how that went.
So I would say I became publicly active in the community at speaking at city councils, board of supervisors, in the state capitol, 2017. I remember, I think what really, so I went to this Sharia law protest in Roseville, 2017. It was June, and I was just stopping by to see, you know, what this was about. It was this one side of the street had a bunch of pro-Muslims where they were talking about wanting to bring Sharia law to California, etc. And so I was like looking up Sharia law. I was like, what the heck is Sharia law? You know what I mean? And I had heard Sharia law from Alex Jones. So in 2014, when I was working at UPS, I remember I was doing what I do, debating, talking to a coworker, and he was a liberal. And he looked at me and goes, Jeff, you sound like Alex Jones. And I went, who? And he goes, you sound like this crazy guy, Alex Jones. And you're amazing, Jeff. He goes, you know, I don't like what you believe, but he goes, damn, you're good at articulating yourself. And I went and looked up Alex Jones. And so in 2014, I started listening to Alex Jones, and I was like, whoa, who's this guy? Like, and so I remember him talking about Sharia law. And so when I drove by this protest, I saw a bunch of pro Sharia people. So I got out of my car because I was just driving by. I didn't go there to protest. I just drove by, and I'm like, what is this? And I swear to you, Ryan, I wasn't out of my car for 3 minutes, and I was being arrested by the police. And I go, and I got it all on camera, right? I hope I can still find this. I might still have it somewhere on my computer. But I was arrested, and they told me I was arrested for disturbing the peace. And I said, what do you mean? I said, don't I have the First Amendment? Don't I have the right to ask people questions? And they said, no, because you're inciting a riot. And I said, inciting a riot? What do you mean? And that was like the beginning of, whoa, the police don't have my back. I used to be like, oh, pro police, you know, the sheriff has our back. They're going to be the one that defend us. No. So that was like the eye opener in 2017 was when I was arrested at the Sharia rally. And then I went to a rally down in San Francisco in December. It was a Kate Steinle rally. It was the one where the illegal alien shot Kate Steinle on the pier.
Yeah.
And they didn't give him a murder charge because they said he accidentally discharged his weapon while attempting to shoot a seal. Seals are protected animals anyway. So the fact that he tried to say, you know, he was trying to shoot an animal but killed her. So there was a rally. I ran into a guy named Joey Gibson from Patriot Prayer. Mm-hmm. And I started listening to him. And so the next month, I met the Proud Boys when I was at a Trump rally. And so I became a conservative, Trump-tard, you know, all about MAGA, MAGA, MAGA for the next 2 years. I was all about Trump. But what really woke me up to the conservative thing being a falsehood and that there's two wings to a bird, the left wing and the right wing, and they're flying the bird one direction, was the fact that when Trump had the House and the Senate and never passed anything, and you had people like Paul Ryan and Lindsey Graham and Mitch McConnell preventing him from doing anything that he said he was going to do. And I was like, why won't they let him do what he wants to do? I started to realize like, whoa, this is all an act. And so then when Donald Trump in 2020 came out with the COVID Operation Warp Speed. And again, the root of me becoming politically active was vaccines. So when he promoted vaccines, I was like, whoa. You're supposed to be about freedom, dude. Why are you promoting this vaccine? And then the country got locked down and all the above. And then, you know, fast forward to the end of 2020, where I was in Washington, D.C. with all my Proud Boy buddies. And we're marching the streets and doing our thing, and, you know, we rally. Well, the next month is January 6, 2021. And the false flag of the Capitol, all my buddies go to prison. Like, everybody I know is in prison right now that went. And that was like, whoa, eye-opener to me, dude. I was like, there is no point in politics left or right. That is all a falsehood. That is all a just BS. There is no political solution with that uniparty, right? Left and right are working together. There is no, I mean, especially with Lindsey Graham signing off and then Mike Pence saying, you know, the election was certified. And then for the next 2 years now, you're dealing with all these investigations or whatever. So I started to investigate Trump. And then when I looked into Trump and then Jared Kushner and Trump's family and who they were married to, that was when the real truth started to come out with the Jews. Because I had always heard, you know, when I was a Proud Boy, you were not allowed to be anti-Semitic. It was like a rule. You cannot be anti-Semitic or you get booted. And I never understood that because I'm like, what's anti-Semitism? You know, the Proud Boys claim they believe in freedom of speech, but you can't talk about the Jews? And I was like, Then I saw the picture of Donald Trump with his hand on the wall wearing the yarmulke. And I started to go little deeper, and started to realize like his largest donors were Jewish. All of his cabinet was Jewish. All these congressmen and women with dual citizenship were Jewish. And then I discovered the Talmud, and I started to discover the Noahide laws, and I just started to discover all these things that were anti-white, anti-goy, anti-Christian, anti-everything not Jewish. And so I had to leave the left-right paradigm behind and ultimately go back to just being race and religion first, right? It's primarily race for me. I love all people have a place for me, but we the whites are being attacked, okay? So for me, it was time to focus on my white children, my white family, and then I started to get ostracized.
when I started to be pro-white, I started to really be attacked. And I was like, why are all these people so against me? Like, for the longest time, they were calling me a Nazi when I was anti-vax. But now I'm really called a Nazi because I'm, like, speaking out on anti-Christian, Jews wanting to do this to us. And everyone kept saying, you're anti-Semitic, you're anti-Semitic. That was the only thing they ever said to me. Well, I'm like, why are you calling me anti-Jewish when I'm telling you I don't want immigration? Why are you calling me anti-Jewish when I'm against abortion? And that was like, oh, Jews are about, they're all about abortion. Oh, Jews are all about open borders. Oh, Jews are all about taking away the Second Amendment. And then that was like, okay, now I'm finding out what the truth is. And then I found guys like Adam Green, who he was like the Alex Jones to me for the Jews. You know, he woke me up. Vincent Hugo, a few other people like that. They just really, really woke me up. And then HT and Hammer and Gypsy with their, like, funny trolling and stuff. And just how bad they were being destroyed for being openly anti-Jew. And so it was just like, all right, I think we're over the target now. I think we understand who the people are. You know, when you're really being attacked for something, you know you're over the target.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, it's not easy to see. I mean, I've read hundreds of history books and stuff. And so it was quite a revelation at age 38 to finally realize who's been pulling the strings here and how we're being made fools of all across the board. But better learn at some point than never. Also, you mentioned that one of your first experiences with activism was at a the Sharia law protest. Do you want to go into like some of the differences between Islam and Judaism? Because I think a lot of the listeners need to understand that maybe there are problems with Islam, but when you put Islam next to Judaism, the Talmud next to the Quran, there are clear differences, which one poses a far worse threat than the other one. Matter of fact, before you go, just based on the sheer numbers, Islam in 1400 years has about 250 million dead, which is pretty horrific. But it's not as bad as communism, which was run by the Jews, which is 100 million in 100 years. So, but yeah, if you wanted to go into like the differences between the religions and what your insights on that were. And then also after that, I wanted to start looking into, I know you, I, and a few others are looking into revising this Declaration of Independence. So just your thoughts on what that looks like. And yeah, if you wanted to comment on that.
So the stark difference between Judaism, in my opinion, and Islam is at least Islam and the Muslim religion, they recognize Jesus as a prophet, and the Jews say that Jesus is boiling in excrement and semen and animal poop and all the above. He was never anything other than just a whore's child, you know, some Roman soldier impregnated Mary. I think his name was Pantera. And that, you know, basically he was just a complete and utter failure, and he was, you know, not God's chosen. He was not a Messiah. He was nothing important. So they crucified him. They stabbed him a bunch of times. Whereas the Muslims, they do believe he was a prophet. They just believe that he was one of the many prophets. You know, Muhammad came next, I believe, in 632. So 600 years later. Islam, you know, they all do have like Wahhabism. They have their extremists, but basic Islam, they're against the LGBT. They're against transgenderism. They're against a lot of the things that the Jews promote. So if you look at Judaism in the Talmud, they say there's like 7 or 9 genders. They're all about transgenderism, homosexuality, open borders, breeding, you know, amongst each other to mud everybody out. Muslims are pretty devoted to their race and their own kind. They like to stick to their own. So that's the stark difference. You know, Wahhabism is the extreme version of Islam, which is just like the rabbinical Jews. You know, it's always going to be the extremes. But when you look at the terrorism that's occurred in our world, the Jews have terrorists and the Muslims both have terrorists, but the Jews have infiltrated governments. They've overthrown countries. Muslims are doing it in a different manner, which is let's migrate, overpopulate. then take over, which is a little bit different than getting in, overthrowing, destroying, and killing everybody. They are both Abrahamic religions, as well as Christianity. Mm-hmm. So I would take Muslims, moderate Muslims, any day over moderate Jews, based on the fact that moderate Muslims still believe in traditional values like marriage between a man and a woman, no LGBT, no transgenderism, etc. So that's kind of my stance on those two. Sharia law is a bit extreme. I don't really understand it completely, but I do know that Sharia law is their own Muslim law. You know, you can kill people. You know, you can kill your sister if she looks at somebody wrong. So again, every group has an extremist viewpoint. But I would take moderate Muslims any day over moderate or extreme Jews, because the Jews are way higher IQ, and they've obviously taken over and done a lot more damage throughout the years, and they've infiltrated every country in the world.
Right, and probably we would probably argue that if it wasn't for Jewish infiltration, that Muslims wouldn't even be here. That's probably the root of a lot of the problems. True. So, yeah, because if you look and see who's behind all this immigration and stuff, and it's Muslims aren't the ones behind it. So, yeah, that's pretty interesting. The other thing is, before you talked about the Declaration of Independence, did you care to talk about, I know you were heavily doxxed by Borwin and others there in Sacramento, and then your interactions at the Sacramento City Council. Did you want to go into that? And then maybe we'll end up the last, we're almost in like the last 10 minutes, so we're not going to have a lot of time. But if you want to cover that, and then maybe briefly at the end of the show, we're going to touch off at about, with 30 seconds left at about 3:59, touch off for about the last minute or two on that declaration. But yeah, if you wanted to talk about that.
So I was doxxed in 2018 in March or February of 2018. First actual mini doxxing was when I met the Proud Boys in January. So the first day that I met the Proud Boys was coincidentally January 6th of 2018. And I was in a MAGA rally, and I was standing there with a bunch of, you know, men and women with American flags and Trump flags. And a masked man wearing a full-blown balaclava mask and all black clothing sucker punched me in the back of the head and knocked me out cold. I never saw him coming, nothing. And that night on Twitter, my picture was on Twitter. And it was being shared by all these leftist groups, and they were all calling me a neo-Nazi. And at that time, I was like, I'm not a Nazi. What do you mean? You can't call me Nazi. I'm not a Nazi. And I was all butthurt about it, you know. And so that was the beginning of my name getting out there. And then what really got me in trouble with the left was when I went to Portland, Oregon for the Battle of Portland in 2.0. It was June 30th of 2018. I was on a megaphone, and this is the event where Rufio knocked out that guy. I was on a megaphone standing there with Tiny, Rufio, Joey, you know, Gibson from Patriot Prayer, all these really big names in the movement. And I made a comment that we should be crushing the heads of all illegal aliens, and we should be deporting all of their children, right? Because last thing we need is the Democrats getting control of these kids, because the Democrats are nothing but pedophiles and rapists who want to take these kids and traffic them. And the next day after that Portland, there was this post on the internet, and I don't remember the site. It was something huge, but it had over 3 million views.
Oh, wow.
And it was my speech, and it was being played over and over and over, all over the media. And next thing I know, my address, there's a poster made of me by Antifa, and it has my address, it has a picture of my car, my license plate, because they knew my name, so they went onto my Facebook, and you know, back then you thought, oh, it's all good to post everything you do on Facebook. And so they knew my wife's name, my children's name, they had pictures of my kids and my family. So they put my address out, my grandma's address, my brother, my mother, my father, everybody you can imagine in my family's address, and we're like, calling my employer. They were just, and I was like, what is this? That was my first experience with doxing. And no sooner than that was going on, they started putting flyers out in my neighborhood. So I woke up like mid-July and they had flyered my whole neighborhood. Every light pole, every stop sign, all my neighbors in their mailbox got a flyer of me, and it was like a wanted poster. And it had Jeffrey Perrine says all illegal aliens should have their heads smashed into the concrete, and all my information calling me a Nazi. And that was the beginning. You know, I go to Walmart, they're all over the Walmart parking lot. I go to Target, they're over there. Go to Home Depot, they're over there. It was crazy. And so I looked at it as a challenge. I said, I'm not backing down. You've already put my life out there. I'm going to go even harder in the paint. So for the next 6 years, even up to now, you know, they still dox me. When I was in Davis in January putting a bunch of flyers out, you know, Antifa posted something on Twitter. Jeffrey Perrine posting anti-Semitic flyers all over UC Davis campus. And all it was exposing Joe Biden's cabinet. Donald Trump's cabinet, every single aspect of abortion is Jewish, the Federal Reserve, BlackRock, vaccines, CDC, and it never stops. And so I started my own business so they couldn't destroy me, you know, because I'll never be able to work. So I created my own business and I became self-sufficient. And I just take every doxing as a badge of honor at this point. You know, I'm unapologetic in what I do. So I'm never going to stop, and I'm never going to back down, and they're never going to scare me away by putting my information out there, you know? Nice. So yeah, now, I've been docked for about 6 years.
Do you, if you had to go back and do that again, would you maybe change some of that language, or would you stick to the original?
I would have changed the rhetoric. I was obviously trying to be alpha male and show off, but it's like, imagine having a microphone on a guy in Vietnam. Yeah. You know, we were in a battlefield, dude. It was like I was in the middle of a war. They were throwing M1000s and blowing holes in the concrete, dude. So
yeah,
it was obviously 2020 hindsight. Yes, I would have kept the megaphone to a minimum. I would have just led the battle, done what I did, not used the rhetoric that I used. And I would probably be in a much better place if I would have used articulate, well-spoken words versus vulgarity and threats of violence.
Yeah, because in the media, they lie and distort everything we say already. So anything that they get that, like in the, that's their terror campaign. It's like in the middle of a war, you're not sitting there thinking about, how should I say this? There's no time for thinking. It's like you just respond. But then I heard that if you fail to prepare, you prepare to fail. And that's huge. But I think experience too plays a large part in that. Cause some of these things, it's just like you learn on the fly. It's like, you know, this gets this reaction, these activists on the left, they're just sitting out there waiting to hear something so they could broadcast it all over America and make you look like public enemy number one, which your average American doesn't understand. The media is controlled. So they're sitting there drinking it up and they don't understand the schools are controlled, the libraries controlled, the radio, everything. And it's really unfortunate that they're able to get away with this. And so many people are so badly deceived, particularly the fair sex. But I know you had endured it because I was watching on Twitter. I tried to go on and help you out. Borwin is, if you want to talk about, we got about 5 minutes left. Maybe if you want to close out by going over that Sacramento adventure when we walked into the city council and then we were met by about 30 to 50 of Antifa, and then they had 30 to 50 police. And then, I think that was what prompted your move to Idaho, if I don't miss my guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I had to get the hell out of there. You know, there's no reason to be there anymore. You know, the ultimate thing that was for me was you called and needed help, right? So you were like, hey, dude, I'm being tormented here. These people are following me to my car. They're trying to terrorize me, threaten me with violence. And I wasn't going to let another one of my white men be dragged down. All you wanted to do is speak. And so when I heard that you were trying to speak and you were trying to do that and you needed help, all I want to do is be there for you to support you. So when you reached out to me and said, hey, Jeff, I know you're local. Would you mind coming out and helping me? No qualms, dude. I was coming for you. And so I brought a couple guys that I'd never really met with WLM and GDL. You know, Scotty was there. And I think really the catalyst to a lot of what occurred was when Scotty threw up the Roman, which you and I both didn't approve of at the time.
No, we did not.
It was not what it was expected, but you and I were already a target. So when you and I were there together, that was all they needed. And yeah, they assaulted us. They threw water at us. They threw banners on us. The mayor shut the meeting down. They turned off the cameras. They locked us in the chambers. It was wild, dude. And I would do it again. I would come and defend you anytime you needed me to if I was in the area. So, yeah, I would just say if you want to touch on that.
Go
ahead.
I had talked to a number of people about that, and you are one of the few that actually responded. So I was really, because for me, I mean, I was going up there by myself, leaving there like 11 o'clock at night with these Antifa thugs tailing you to your car was definitely not anything I welcomed. I mean, if I had to deal with it, I had some ways, but no, they only really respect numbers. That's just really what it comes down to. And when they're sending 30 to 40 of them after one guy, because that's what would have happened. If you guys hadn't shown up, it would have been 30, 40 against one, which I'm not really deterred by because I think one of us with good arguments, we could take about 5 million of them in a debate. But it's not going to be a fair debate because they're going to use force as soon as they possibly can. That's how they operate. But no, I really appreciate you going out of your way and coming up there because that really just the fact that you came up there with three others, Lisa Kaplan was so afraid. She shut the meeting down. Never mind. She had 40 protesters there for her and 40 police officers. Well, we're at the end of our time. Hey, thanks a lot, Jeff. Been a pleasure having you. Look forward to having you on again soon. Take good care of yourself.
Take care, Ryan. Bye, buddy.
Yep. Bye now.
Thank you for listening to the Ryan Massano Show. Tune in every Saturday and Sunday nights on SpeakFreeRadio.com for more of Ryan's takes on the eternal truths, traditional values, and divine insights. Remember, truth is hate for those who hate the truth. And Ryan and Speak Free Radio champion the truth. See you next time.